Welcome back to We the People Radio. Bill's not allowed to tell me something funny right before we start. What the heck is that all about? It's against the law not to laugh. All right, so it's my turn to be upended. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
See, you didn't trick me that bad.
Comic relief here.
I still remembered who I was.
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape is everything John Deere. You need a tractor, a mower, you need implements, you need service on your tractor, go up and see them. They're local, located at 3119 Twin Lake Boulevard, easy for me to say, in Shasta Lake City. They're right between Pine Grove and Oasis Road exits. So go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226. They can fix you up with all your ag needs. If they don't have it, they can find it for you. So, or you can catch them on the web, papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Okay, yeah. And you can find our archives, 11 years of archives. We were sort of like doing the podcast thing before podcasting was cool. Actually, I don't think they'd invented it yet.
No, I don't think so.
I think only weirdos did it back then, as a matter of fact. I think someone tried to talk us into doing that. Hey, it'd be cheaper if you guys had a podcast. And if you called an actual person who was, you know, like fairly well known to be a guest, yeah, you want to be on my podcast? They were like, not really.
I don't own an iPod.
It's kind of a joke, so it's kind of fun. That has taken off. We sort of subscribe to the Joe Rogan format where we just sort of have people on and start talking to them.
What about the other part? When are they going to pay me $1 million for
that's pretty much contract?
That hasn't come through yet. As soon as it does, I'll read it real close. But
you know what? I could write you a check right now.
All right. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign your name to it.
Here we go.
Oh, my goodness. So, anyway, you can find all that frivolity at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll remind you of that a few times during the show, like every break. But it is really helpful. Robert takes out the bits of free enterprise, so you have them uninterrupted. And they're, I don't know, what is the whole show, maybe hour and a half? He's got it broken into two pieces, first hour, second hour. So if you cut the first, you don't have to listen to the whole thing again. You can pick the first, the second. You can pick the archive piece that says both hours at the same time. So we try to, you know, try to help you out. And each page on our website has information about our guest, any articles that they, you know, want you to have. And it also has links for previous shows with them. If you think, oh, this guy's really smart, you should pop on there and listen to other shows we've done with them. We try to do things that aren't, you know, that aren't just local and that nobody else would know about. We try to do things that are a little bit wider topic. And today being February 20th, 2022, when we air this the first time, we thought we would talk with our friend William Walter Kay, who is up in Canada. And, you know, since all eyes are on Canada, and I have not checked the news this morning, so I don't know exactly what's happening, but I know they arrested like 170 truck drivers yesterday or some ungodly number. And so usually we have him on talking about environmentalism. And
well, they arrested him, but did they actually take him to jail or did they just take him home?
Like that show.
Because in Canada, a lot of times they just give you
a ride.
There's
a show
home
on Netflix called Under Arrest. It's about the police in Canada, and it's pretty
Those
funny.
Those people are not from Ottawa. I think the deal is most of them are going to make bail on the condition that they leave Ottawa.
Leave town.
So I don't know how the court case is going to proceed because they're going to go all the way back to Alberta. So I don't know if they're going to
charge them.
Some of them are going to, it's going to be specific charges of assault, what have you, here and there. But for the most part, it's you get bail on condition that you leave town.
Nice. Well, we typically, at least down here in the U.S., and I'm assuming other places in the world, the Canadians are famous for, you know, non-aggression. They're not, I don't think they've gotten as many jokes about them as the French. You know, the French always, you know, always getting the yellow flag jokes. But the Canadians are typically pretty
mellow.
You know, pretty relaxed.
Yeah.
And this has been really interesting to watch with this trucker convoy. So a little bit about our guest. If he sent me new information, I asked him to send it to me, and then I didn't look to see if he did. So I'll read the old information. I'm not going to tell you where he lives because he's moving, so I don't even know where he lives now. He's in between.
I'm still in Regina, Saskatchewan.
Oh, okay.
The last time we spoke.
All right. Well, I have Alberta in here, so I guess I better get rid of Alberta, and you better tell me how to spell the other one.
I've lived in Alberta for a long time. It's an important part of this story because even though the truckers are in Ottawa, excuse me, just about everybody who's involved in that convoy, I would say definitely over half, are from either Alberta or Saskatchewan.
Hmm.
And I've been involved in sort of the COVID protest movement in both of these provinces. I keep quitting in disgust, right? There's so many crackpots in that movement.
And then it's still going, and then you got to get back involved again?
But yeah.
Well, I said, and then you just get disgusted again, and you have to get involved. We should tell people, though,
what happened this time, it was dead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we should tell people, you have a law degree, and you specialize in Canadian constitutional law. And I thought that was particularly useful today, because, as I had told you in my email, you know, unless you're doing it for a project or your work or something or a degree of some kind, most of us don't know a lot about how other people's, you know, other countries' governments really work from the citizen standpoint. So we kind of, we sort of Americanize everything, obviously, and we sort of think, well, you guys are the same as we are. You've got the same, you've got a constitution. It must be really similar. It's just different guys wrote it. But what is the... Start us off with the rights. What are the rights of individual citizens there?
Well, prior to the passage of the Charter of Rights in 1980, there were no specific rights. There was some legislation that sort of conditioned it, but we are not the product of the American Revolution. Canada was primarily molded by loyalists who fled the American Revolution. So Canada remains a monarchy. Technically, our head of state is a governor general, which is an unelected person. We have an unelected Senate. The selection and appointment of judges is done without any transparency or review.
Oh, wow.
We're not nearly as democratic as the United States is.
And so how do you get the premier? You vote for him, right?
Well, a premier, there's a prime minister who is the head of the federal government, and then there are premiers who occupy a position similar to a governor in a U.S. state. In both instances, the country is broken into constituencies which are similar to what you would call congressional districts. And in each constituency, there's an election. It's a first-past-the-post. There's no obligation to vote. Voter turnouts are relatively low. And it's whoever gets the plurality of the votes wins. Those, all the members that win, they attend either the parliament or a provincial legislature, and they technically elect who is going to be the prime minister, but it's only either the lieutenant governor or the governor general's signature which makes this valid. So we've got a lot of archaic institutions held over from Britain. Like, we are still technically a monarchy. Even though, for all intents and purposes, the prime minister is, you know, the president, he's the king, dictator in chief. If you control the House of Commons effectively, you control all aspects of the federal government.
And then has he got a term?
No, unlimited term. Some of them have lasted as long as 30 years.
Oh, wow.
That's a bad sign.
And incumbency is a horrible thing. You see it a lot in the individual members of Parliament. Some of them have been sitting in the same seat for 40 years. You get that in the Congress as well. I know that. There's people who just sort of...
But they're still there because people keep electing them. I mean, they do have term limits. We have elections every 2 years for members of the House. And
I know, but the same thing is plaguing both Canada and the United States. More and more of the actual seats and districts are completely lopsided. I mean, one person, they're not, some seats go back and forth, right? But some seats increasingly are just, you know, one party is getting 80% of the vote, and it's almost a foregone conclusion. You certainly see that in the prairies in Canada where I'm at right now, in the rural areas.
Now tell us your...
It's a very lopsided election.
And your conservative party, that's not what we think is conservative here, right? Isn't that the opposite?
No, you would call them rhinos, like with a capital R, what we're calling conservatives here. In the last election, the federal conservative party ran on a campaign that the COVID restrictions weren't harsh enough.
Yeah, I read your article about that.
And on that side.
Yeah, when I read your article about that, I thought, okay, conservatives there must be liberals here. No.
I try to avoid the term. There's an official conservative party. I can look at them, but you start throwing terms like conservatism and liberalism.
Yeah.
Those terms are so ahistorically used, it's almost worthless. But the term conservative is almost like a sacred term. A lot of people believe if we just all held hands and said that word over and over again, miracles will happen. But the conservative movement is very deeply divided in Canada. You're really seeing this now.
Who's the other team? Like, who? If you're not part of the Conservative Party, you're part of the what?
There's the Liberal Party of Canada. Justin Trudeau.
Okay.
He is a member of the Liberal Party of Canada.
Oh, okay.
Right now, federally, it's a minority government. No party has a majority. So the Liberal Party is operating a sort of a loose coalition or alliance with the New Democratic Party, which is this. You don't have anything like that in the States, I must say.
Even with Bernie or anything?
There's also a thing called the... What's that?
Even with, like, Bernie Sanders or anything?
Yeah, you know, okay, you do. Okay. Yeah. Sort of Bernie Sanders. But
like,
Bernie
what?
Sanders controlling, you know, a fifth of the Congress.
Yeah. Wow, yeah, that's scary.
Well, we've got AOC and that whole thing, but that's kind of blowing them up.
It's that element.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
They're very much... Plus, we've got a thing called the Bloc Québécois, which are these, they sort of claim to be sovereigntist, independentist, but they're really all about, you know, how can we manipulate the federal government so that Quebec can bilk as much money as possible out of the rest of Canada. That's what they're all about. And they're bigger than the NDP. They probably have 30 or 40 members in Parliament right now.
And what's an NDP?
It stands for the New Democratic Party.
Okay.
I consider them sort of pseudo-leftists. They're just adrift right now. They're very pro-immigration, very pro-environmentalist. They don't seem to have anything else to talk about. But they're persistent, and they do manage to cling on to, you know, dozens of Parliament seats. And they're also the provincial government in British Columbia right now is an NDP government. They're deep within the union bureaucracy. They've got a lot of allies in there, particularly in the government unions. So they are a pretty solid block in some parts of the country.
Hmm. Okay. Wow. See, I figure we better figure that part out, because sometimes it's, you know, some of the things when you hear them from around the country, you realize, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't mean the same thing as it does here. So if you were going to have good people...
No, Americans would be surprised at how undemocratic our system is.
Yeah, I am kind of surprised.
When your Supreme Court is brought before the Senate and that, and they review them, we don't do anything like that. We just get an article in the newspaper saying so-and-so is now in the Supreme Court or so-and-so is now in the Senate. They are appointed without any election, without any transparency.
Wow.
I know. It's utterly absurd. Like, the NDP, for all their flaws, they do at least call for abolishing the Senate.
There's a couple hundred
people there who are... What's that?
So you have a Senate and a what?
A Parliament.
We have a House of Commons.
Okay.
Which is for the parliamentarians. And we have a Senate. Senate which does basically nothing.
Yeah, they're just unelected.
They're just bag men. It's just patronage for people who, you know, devoted their lives to raising money for the Liberal Party. You get rewarded with a Senate seat until you're 75. And you don't have to do anything really but, you know, go on foreign junket.
Wow.
And pay $20 for glasses of orange juice.
So when things are decided then, okay, so in ours, a bill is brought up somewhere. If it's spending, it has to start in the House. That's the rule. Otherwise, it could start either place. It has to be passed through both the Senate and the House and then signed by the President. So now in your system, if they're going to make a rule, how does that happen?
Legislation. Technically, the Senate can raise legislation at the federal level. That never happens. Oh. Bills are raised by the political party that has the majority in the House of Commons. They vote on it. They read it three times. They vote on it. It does not become law until the Governor General signs it. The Governor General is the agent of the British monarch. But they are appointed on the advice of the sitting government, and they're supposed to have term limits. And it's a crisis waiting to happen. In 1975 in Australia, same system, the Governor General, out of the blue, fires the Prime Minister and appoints the leader of the opposition to be the Prime Minister. And that was legal. Even though the Governor General is not an elected official. And that hasn't happened in Canada for almost a century. But it's just a matter of time before there's going to be some political crisis and this whole thing is going to come unglued.
Wow.
Certainly the truck drivers were hoping that. In the master plan, they had this sort of insurrectionary plot. They were going to get the Governor General to fire the whole Parliament and to dissolve the government, which the sitting governor general would never do in a million years, and it would probably be ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. But that was part of the truckers, their sort of master plan as to how they were going to overthrow the government with this Freedom Convoy. And it just shows that, you know, they also did not have a clue about how the Canadian Constitution really works.
Oh, see, therein lies the problem. I wondered about that. See, because that's all part and parcel of it. How do the rules work? Because then when you're going to do something and be out of the box and you're going to challenge the rules, you better know what they are, or they curse
you. Well, now we're under martial law again. This is not the first time this has happened.
Let us take a really quick break and then come back. I don't want to interrupt that part because we've heard that, and that means something here. I mean, that's like...
Yeah.
And
I think it means something there, too. But when you had said that's not the first time, I thought, what? What did I miss? So we're going to come right back. Our guest is William Walter Kaye. He has a constitutional law degree, and he specializes in Canadian constitutional law. But he also lives near where the trucker convoy is and knows guys that are in it. So we're going to get into that whole thing, how it's allowed to happen, why it happened, possible outcomes will be, and that's what we'll be doing for the next 2 hours. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
Singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
My idea of a good revolution. Okay, so we had questions on the break, William. Who, if you're in a monarchy, who's the monarch? Is it the Queen of England, or do you have your own?
Yes, Betty Windsor.
and
Betty Windsor.
And her title is
Queen.
Queen. Okay, and then
she's
you
the queen
said
of Canada. She's the queen of a number of places.
Okay, and then you said there was the prime minister, and then above him was the
governor general.
Okay,
that's
who's that?
Figure out.
Oh, I forget her name. She's recently appointed. We just went through a miniature crisis because they appointed Canada's first woman astronaut to be the governor general. It's usually a ceremonial role. If everything is going right, the governor general doesn't do anything. The governor general is only supposed to kick in if the prime minister's party no longer commands a majority in the House of Commons and they are losing on a money bill. If they propose a money bill and they lose, they can't pass it, the governor general is then supposed to intervene at the request of the prime minister and dissolve the parliament and re-elect it. But there's been a few episodes where that gets kind of wacky. Technically, if you look at the law, the governor general can liquidate the parliament anytime they want. The law is an archaism.
Yeah.
But recently they appointed this astronaut, this female astronaut, to be the governor general, and she was apparently had severe mental problems, and she was severely verbally abusing her staff in public and things like that. So there was a bit of a hoo-ha-ha, but she voluntarily resigned, and now we've got a new one who, of course, is part native, so we can't say a bad thing about her. But we narrowly dodged a constitutional crisis because there was that person that the sort of the nutty astronaut. She did not have to leave office. She could have done the opposite and fired the prime minister, but the media pressure was on her so much, and they were getting staff members on TV crying, and they got rid of her. But that was, we dodged a crisis there. Like, the system is an archaism.
Now, how did they get rid of her?
They just put political pressure on her and personal pressure on her, and she resigned.
Oh, she resigned. Okay. All right.
But there was no legal obligation to do it. So we dodged a bullet there. So we're always sort of on the cusp of a potential constitutional crisis.
Can you do recalls like we do here?
No.
Or impeachments? Do you have those?
Never happened.
Oh, no kidding. So
The Prime Minister, Justin, was caught in a pretty nasty scandal a couple of years ago, but it all gets swept under the carpet. You simply have to wait for the next election. That sort of thing does not happen. Occasionally, ministers resign in disgrace when they've been exposed with their hand in the cookie jar, but that's never happened to a Prime Minister.
And how long is their term?
Forever.
Well, we're supposed to have an election once every 5 years. They can, if you're in power, you can pull a fast one and sometimes call an election when no one's expecting it and stay in power that way. You can sort of quick kick on them. There's an unlimited number of terms.
Wow.
Wow, so that really is a different system.
Yeah.
I don't think we're...
Well, it's just interesting. We never hear about your governor general, so they must really be, like, in the background, don't really make much...
They are. It's supposed to be a ceremonial post, but it's an indispensable cornerstone. In a lot of systems, like the French system, the governor general would be the president. And it's really good, once again, the prime minister running the government, and the president steps in only when things have really gone haywire and people have to be fired, etc., like that. But that's an elected official that's doing that. In Canada, no, this is an appointed official that's doing this.
Now, is that different than the way they do things in England? It sounds pretty similar.
Well, in England, the Queen herself fulfills that function.
Uh-huh.
When the Prime Minister could no longer command the majority of the House and money bills are not being passed, Queen Elizabeth is to step in and dissolve Parliament and call an election if the Prime Minister is refusing to do so.
So your system is modeled after the English system with a few...
Yeah, it is a carbon copy.
Yeah.
With the added benefit of being really far away so that they really can't help you, or I guess maybe they can't hurt you either, but...
Until the 1930s, the Supreme Court of Canada was the Privy Council in England until well into the 20th century. If you lost at the high courts in Canada, you would appeal your decision across the seas, and a committee from the House of Lords would decide it. That was the case until the 1930s. Since then, the Supreme Court of Canada is the highest court in the land.
But you don't get to elect them.
No, and it's not at all like, you know, all the drama that you guys get, which is the way to do it, like have an open, transparent system.
Well, like we elect the people who choose them. So some people here would say, well, we don't elect them either, but we do because they come through people we've elected. But yours,
you have these public hearings.
Yeah, you have to be approved. You have to be okayed through the Senate and the House.
And so yours just parachute in.
And the whole country can watch these hearings. We have nothing remotely like that. You know, the Sicilian Mafia has more transparency than the way we pick judges.
How many of them are there?
There's 9 Supreme Court judges. The federal government picks the judges right across the country, so they have a lot of power through that procedure. There's some very lower level provincial court judges they don't select, but even the main provincial, you know, Supreme Courts and the provincial courts of appeal, those are federal appointees. So the federal government has a lot of influence through the judiciary. And this whole process is not transparent at all. It's all
wow. So if you get
connections and who you know.
If you get like a, you know, just something boring, like, you know, traffic tickets or something like that, and you've got to go to court, like a local court.
Mm-hmm.
How does that judge?
That would be a provincial court judge.
Provincial.
That, you know, sometimes they're called magistrates. They're not even a real judge for those sorts of cases. But those are provincial appointments.
Oh dear.
Wow. It's very different than what we have.
Okay, so bottom line, don't get arrested in Canada. sounds like anything could happen.
You better know somebody.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's the lesson we should take away. So, okay, William, you had said that this is not the first time they've declared martial law.
No, it's happened. It used to be called the War Measures Act. Now it's called the Emergencies Act. But when I was 10 years old, I have specific recollections of it. There was... Justin Trudeau's father, Pierre Trudeau, was prime minister at the time, He declared the War Measures Act. In the space of about 3 or 4 days, 800 Canadians had their doors kicked down, often in the middle of the night. They were dragged out to secret detention centers. They were held in hotels and motels. They were physically abused. They were not allowed to have a lawyer for weeks on end. That happened in this country. I remember this quite specifically.
What precipitated that?
Okay, there was... if we get enough time, I will give you a bit of a history of who Pierre Trudeau was. It's quite an astonishing story, and most Canadians don't know it. But when he was prime minister, part of the understanding of letting him be prime minister is that he would crush the separatist movement in Quebec. And the separatist movement in Quebec was divided in a number of groups, but there was definitely a powerful left-wing movement in Quebec, in Montreal. They were committed to democracy. They were committed to elections, and they were really gaining a lot of power. And a lot of people, certainly in the Anglo establishment in Montreal and the sort of the old guard in Toronto, were getting really worried about that. There was another faction of the Quebec far-left separatist movement that embarked on an armed struggle. They were known as the FLQ, or the Liberation Front of Quebec. And, you know, if you recall a group called the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Patty Hearst.
They kidnapped Patty Hearst.
Yeah. And they were, okay, like, fake. There was, like, eight of them or something.
Yeah. The FLQ were a lot like that. Like, at the time when Pierre Trudeau declared martial law, there was only 24 of them on the street. They were living in three separate houses, but they had just kidnapped some people. And the Quebec, the Montreal City Police and the Quebec Provincial Police both said that there's no need for martial law. The police can handle it. And that is shades of what we're seeing right now. Like, was it really necessary to declare martial law to deal with this trucker thing? The police could handle this. The police are doing most of the stuff now. And that happened with the FLQ as well. They were rounded up by the police, not by the army. But Pierre Trudeau had, you know, helicopters and tanks all over Ottawa. It was all these theatrical props. But the people they were really going after were the democratic separatists. They were the ones who were getting their doors kicked down. That's a standard practice of a dictator. You know, they say, look at these bad guys over here, but they're casting their net far wider.
Yeah, it always happens.
The bad guys. And, yeah, 800 people were rounded up. They took away all those people's printing presses. They physically smashed their offices to pieces. This went on all over Montreal area. It was in the middle of a municipal election. One of the political parties, Montreal is a big city. There were 52 jobs up for vote, like councillors, mayors, what have you, up for vote. All 52 of one party were thrown in jail during the election. And Trudeau's buddy, Jean Drapeau, who, like Trudeau, was a raving fascist, wins a landslide because the opposition's all sitting in jail.
Wow.
This happened, you know,
it's a nice trick.
That's a true democracy there.
Yeah. So this is that was Pierre Trudeau, and he is the guy that then writes our current Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Oh.
And the opening line of it is that all of the rights within this charter can be suspended. That's rule number one.
Rule number one is it's not really a rule.
If we don't like what you're saying.
It's, you know, it's basically, they make it very clear from the get-go that we can suspend these rights in times of emergency, war, blah, blah, blah.
But that's not really defined.
Yeah, it's just any threat to any threat to power.
Look at this Freedom Convoy. They could have stopped this convoy anywhere along the way. I'm convinced they allowed it to come to Ottawa. They allowed it to sit there for 3 weeks as a pretext for what used to be called the War Measures Act. That was the sort of the martial law in Canada. His father changed the name to the Emergency Act. But other than that, it's completely the same. I mean, one of the rules of today's martial law is that they can order any tow truck operator to tow any vehicle. If he refuses, he goes to jail.
You will comply.
In today's...
Yeah, yeah. It's making quite a ripple effect in the States too. I mean, there's a lot of talk about how it's going to affect the banking and cryptocurrency. I mean, it's
moreover, the crisis
go to waste.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Moreover than that, what's happened
is an opportunity for the federal government. Like, we have these monster police bureaucracies here. It's not just the RCMP, which is one of the biggest police forces in the world. We've also got, you know, Canadian Border Securities, and we've got a force called CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service.
Oh.
And this is turning into an opportunity for them to really learn how to grab cryptocurrencies, how to seize those kinds of assets, how to block that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they block the GoFundMe, they block the Give, Send, Go. And proof that we're in Canada, the banks were seizing those accounts before the federal government even told them to.
Whoa, no kidding. And so when they seize the account, does the account is the account just frozen, or do they, are they actually stealing the
frozen
money?
The first one, GoFundMe, after the account was frozen, they agreed to refund the people, the donors. And I think with the most of those donors then resent the money through Give, Send, Go, and those accounts are frozen, and now there's a bunch of lawsuits against the convoy. You know, once lawyers know there's a fixed pot of money, like $9 million sitting in a bank account, they'll be all over that. And so all the people who can allege to have suffered damages as the result of the protest will be able to feast upon that. And I'm sure a lot of truck drivers are going to lose their rigs. They're going to be impounded, and it's going to cost them a fortune to get that back. And that money is also going to go into the pot, and it's going to be distributed by, you know, the city of Ottawa, et cetera. But, yep, they grabbed all of that, and that money is gone.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. There's just a lot of this. And, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, they're protesting for their rights and all that. And so people down here obviously get that and would support that. But we really have no idea what the consequences are up there, you know. And
they're going to throw a pretty wide net. Do you have the group called Proud Boys in the United States?
Allegedly, but you know, they always say they're there.
No, they are in Canada. They are a declared terrorist organization. You go to jail if you were a member of the Proud Boys.
Oh, I think you wind up. The bad part is here. They wind up saying you are. But it's because you, I don't know, did something they don't like. Oh, he's a Proud Boy. Oh, ooh.
Yeah, they're white. They're and down
no,
here.
I'm
they're
not a fan. I think they're a bunch of clowns. Personally.
Well, I'm not a fan either. But the thing is, I haven't seen.
Terrorist organizations are not.
Yeah, I haven't seen
but they
anything.
Are in Canada. They are a declared terrorist organization.
No kidding. And they are really a group, or were.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They used to have chapters. They're more or less a bunch of drunks, really.
Huh.
And I don't worry about them. They're once again, this is simply a matter for local policing. If they're getting out of line and being rowdy and abusing
Reel
people,
them in.
This is not a matter for, you know, Secret Service to get involved.
Yeah.
And that's what our guys are doing, too. Interesting. We have to take another really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, William Walter Kay. He is up in Canada, kind of giving us the scoop on what's going on up there. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Seemed fitting. Okay, so this is really it's not a good position for these guys to be in there up in Canada. Here, I figured they'd go have a big thing and I don't know.
So is
go home.
How is this move by Trudeau? The whole martial law thing. How is that going over with Parliament? I mean, does he still? He's got a majority, and he's not.
According to Trudeau, he does not have a majority. He has a minority, but he's got the support of the NDP.
Okay,
his seats plus their seats equal a majority.
The
current law is that once you declare the Emergencies Act in effect, which is martial law, then you must call Parliament, if you can, within the next 7 days to debate it. The full force of the martial law goes ahead full blast before the debate takes place. You don't have to wait for the debate. It kicks in immediately, and that allowed them to bring in several thousand police from, you know, from Quebec,
right,
from Toronto, and to mobilize all the different police forces, which they could have done anyway. Martial law, or the emergency law, has to be renewed every 30 days after that. So they're going to have to debate it again in 30 days.
Now, have they debated it?
And they can agree to extend it. They're doing it now. It's going to pass. It's a foregone conclusion because the NDP has come out explicitly saying they're going to support it.
Wow.
And that gives Trudeau enough seats to win any vote. The Bloc Québécois, because they remember the fire last time, they were a lot of the victims of it last time. They are shrieking opposed to it. The Conservatives, who are they're muddled, and they're basically coming out against it, but they're all over the map, really. And a lot of them made a huge mistake of cozying up too much with the convoy until now, and now they're trying to sort of, you know, lay low and sort of back away from it. I fear that it's going to be similar to the January 6th. I think they're going to release a couple hundred people, and then they're going to start making another wave of arrests. I think some people are going to be looking at some sort of insurrection or sedition charges, and it's an opportunity for them to once a go start snooping and arresting people. What happened, like, it wasn't just the occupation of the city of Ottawa by the Rigs. There was an effort to simultaneously block all of the main U.S. to Canada highways.
Mm-hmm. All right, the bridge and everything.
And that caused a lot of chaos, too. The Ambassador Bridge links Windsor, Ontario to Detroit, Michigan.
Right.
And they estimate it's about $300 million U.S. a day goes across that in trucks. The whole auto industry, the parts go back and forth. I don't know how many times before you make a car, but it's a very integrated operation. Southern Ontario is integrated into the U.S. whole automaking system. So you block one of those bridges, you cause chaos. And they blocked a number of other bridges, cross-border points. One not far from where I'm at now, there was one in Coutts, Alberta, that they blocked, and that's a major highway there. Coutts is just a little village, but it's right at the border with Montana and Alberta. They blocked that, and that's where all the major arrests went down. 13 guys got arrested. Four of them have been charged with plotting to murder police officers.
Oh.
And they arrested them with a bunch of weapons, what have you. And, you know, this ain't Texas. That's actually against the law, to plot to murder police officers. So those guys are going down. And it seemed kind of suspicious to me, but I don't, you know, it's all quite possible. But, you know, that was like 24 hours before they declared martial law. It seemed like kind of convenient timing that the police would make that raid when they did. But make no doubt about it, though, those weapons were at trailers where they had blockaded the highway. So there was semis turned this way and that, blockading the highway. And adjacent to that, there was a couple of trailers, and they had 13 assault rifles. They had body armor. They had large amounts of ammunition. So those guys are in a lot of hot water. I'm not sure what the plan was.
Yeah, but, well, that's obviously
didn't work out.
That's going to be illegal pretty much anywhere.
Well, the guys downtown.
These guys were members of a thing called the Diagonal, and they have a vision of North America and this is going to hurt you guys in California, but they have a vision of North America where from Florida, Texas, all the way up to Alaska becomes an independent country, and the U.S. Northeast and the Pacific Northwest and California are not welcome in their country.
You know what? It's that sad. Even the Canadian revolutionaries don't want California. Like, those guys are just too weird. They'll just screw it all up. You know what? I'm here to let you know that your revolutionaries are really smart.
Badges on their coats. They're walking diagonal up and down the hallway in a prison right now. That was a blunder, but there's that movement's out there. It's a mistake to say they don't exist, that element. They do. They were never a significant part of the actual protest, but they definitely played a role.
So the martial law, if I heard you right, is going to be in effect for at least another 30 days.
Yep.
And then they have to discuss it again.
An opportunity to extend it. I know with Pierre, Justin's dad. Oh, he kept it in for I think 6 months.
Oh wow.
And during that time, censors rule. Pierre had a real flair for the dramatics, so he always had thousands of soldiers walking around Ottawa, even there was absolutely no threat going on. And it was also, never let a crisis go to waste. It was during that period that the hysteria that the federal government had whipped up, that Quebec won a lot of concessions. We really changed Confederation in the midst of this great hysteria that he'd whipped up during the War Measures Act. Mm-hmm. Namely, that the plan was never that the whole country had to be bilingual. The plan was that you could speak French in Quebec uninhibited. But during the October crisis and shortly thereafter, they sort of changed it so the entire federal civil service pretty much has to be bilingual. And because only people from Quebec speak French, it greatly advantaged them. And they also set up all kinds of French language institutions across the country. And worst of all, they changed the equalization program so that the rest of the country basically has to pay tribute to Quebec to keep them happy so they won't separate. And this has been going on ever since, and they have milked the rest of the country for hundreds of billions of dollars. But it was during the hysteria. It's the fact of this, never let a crisis go to waste. Like, a lot of those changes were rammed through while there was all these helicopters and tanks and everything moving around, and people were in a state of panic. And before I forget, it has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the bulk of the bombings that were attributed to the FLQ were actually carried out by the federal government, by the RCMP.
Oh, my God, they are taking a page out of our playbook.
I'll give you one example of that. In the height of this crisis that they had created, an RCMP officer blew off his own arm, setting a bomb in a grocery store. And the first responders were there, and they came with the Montreal City Police, and they arrested him as they were taking him to the hospital for putting a bomb. And when they get to the hospital, the RCMP muckety-mucks show up, and they tell the Quebec City Police, well, just let him go. Let's just sweep this under the carpet. And they refused. They said, no, you're setting off bombs in public spaces. You're getting arrested. And they charge him. And then the RCMP said, well, he was a rogue agent. We never told him to do that. And then the man himself, in his own defense, says, this is not true. I was on specific orders to do this. And he described two other bombings that he had committed on behalf of the RCMP. And a month or so into it, all the FLQ were in jail. One small cell was allowed to fly to Cuba if they agreed to release their hostage once they got to Cuba. But within 6 weeks of declaring martial law, the entire FLQ were off the streets. But the bombings went on for another 5 or 6 months, and that was 100% RCMP. And all of these bombings, they were carefully designed that nobody was getting hurt. They made a lot of noise. They blew up statues, things like that. But that was 100% RCMP bombing.
Wow.
And Pierre Trudeau was definitely in the loop. He knew exactly what was going on, Justin's father.
Yeah.
And I think I already know the answer, but the repercussions of that were?
Well, it was a lot of repression. It was crushing a social movement in Montreal, and we ended up with a really skewered federation that, that greatly privileges Pierre Trudeau's beloved home, fatherland.
Hmm. So when people found out that the federal government was behind a lot of that, I mean, was there any blowback, or did they ever
really find out?
Well,
there were two commissions, one commissioned by the federal government, which did not do anything but tell everybody what we already knew. And there was another one several years later, a sovereigntist won a provincial election, and they ordered their own commission, and a lot of this stuff came out there. It is common knowledge in Quebec. It is why the Bloc Québécois today are so angry that, that Justin's reimposing martial law, because they have a vivid recollection of it, and it was called the Ledain Commission. And yeah, they beyond a shadow of a doubt, they established that a great many bombings were conducted by the RCMP.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah, you know.
So this next 30 days, this next 30 days will be interesting to see how far he enforces
it. Yeah, we'll see. My theory is they're probably going to throw the net out a bit broader. They're really going to try to hit the intersection between sort of the fringe conservatives and the official conservative. They're going to try to force the Conservative Party to come to the defense of some of these groups that are kind of way out there. There's no getting around the fact that what the leaders of the convoy were trying to do could be construed as a type of an insurrectionary plot. I mean, the plan was to completely bottle up the capital city, block a lot of the sufficient number of the highway border checkpoints that you would cause economic chaos, and then somehow compel the governor general to dissolve the parliament. But that simply wouldn't happen. But they put this in print. They put this on the social media. So it's a lot like the loose talk around January 6th is getting a lot of people into trouble now.
Right.
They're this sort of thing. It was called Operation Bear Hug, that the convoy was sort of, this was the secret agenda. But a lot of those people, they might well be looking at some like really hardcore sedition, insurrection type charges, and those can, you can get life in jail for that.
Do you think, as a result of the martial law, I mean, it's really, it looks like it's really cooled down the protest. Are people still on the streets? I mean, is that movement pretty much crushed at this point?
About 2 weeks ago, we had a really big rally in this city. There was talk that they were going to try to organize a blockade, but it never really fizzled out. There's not too much happening on the streets anywhere. As far as I know, all the blockades have been lifted. But the bottom line is they're only arresting a couple of hundred people, and they're releasing them. So the anger is still there. But I remember that before January 15th. On January the 15th of this year, that is when the federal government imposed the mandate on cross-border truckers. Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, they had to either be vaccinated or go through the whole rubber hose up the nose, solitary confinement nonsense for a couple of weeks. So they're basically mandating it. That set off this great maelstrom. But before that, the COVID protest movement in Canada was as dead as a doorknob. It had been just grifted to death. A lot of very bad people had positioned themselves in leadership. It was going nowhere. It was having no measurable impact on policy. And then the federal government passes this mandate on cross-border trucking, and this sets off this huge explosion. So to me, question number one is, why exactly did, because what happened, the federal government imposes a mandate on cross-border trucking. Within the week, Biden imposes a ban on, issues the same mandate on both borders. And we're at the end of this pandemic.
Right, yeah. It's winding down.
Why now? And this is, cross-border trucking were declared an essential service throughout the whole pandemic. Yet now you have decided to do this to them?
Yeah.
And final point, is there a more socially distanced occupation than a long-distance trucker?
Right. Exactly.
He sits in the cab all alone 99% of the time. He gets to his destination. He usually has to run in, drop off some paperwork, pick up some paperwork, and he's back in his cab, and he's driving away. This isn't a school teacher or someone who's working in a crowded environment.
Yeah.
And this is one of the least likely people to be a spreader of the virus. So why now, and why pick an occupation that is clearly not a major vector of any sort of disease?
Yeah, that does seem kind of odd.
I have the answer.
Well, before you...
Okay, hold that thought, because we got to come back, and we're going to have you as our hostage without the emergency powers for another hour. Be our voluntary hostage.
Okay.
Our guest is William Walter Kay. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Oh, sorry,
hey,
Bill. Sorry.
You stepped on me. Oops. What's going on?
A green belt wrapped around.